We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
From Learfield, this is the CU Buffs Insider. Here's the voice of the Buffaloes, Mark Johnson.
Hi again, everybody. Welcome to the Buffs Insider weekly podcast. I'm voice of the Buffs, Mark Johnson, along with Neil Welk of CUBuffs.com. I'll lead off by talking about some football. Colorado coming up. The loss to Washington last weekend as they dropped the 3-1 on the season. 37-10 the final as the Buffaloes dropped their Pac-12 conference opener. Now this week on the road against UCLA in the Rose Bowl, another late game on Saturday night, 8:36 Mountain Time is the kickoff. We're going to hit the air on the Colorado Football Network at 6:30 with Gary Barnett, Mike Pritchard, yours truly, with the Buffalo Stampede pregame show. All right, Neil, what's the takeaway, do you think, from Washington?
Well, number one, the takeaway is they're not going to see anybody better. I think Washington is as good a team as they're going to see, you know, throughout the regular season. I think USC is very good. I think there are a lot of the very good teams in this conference. But overall, I think Washington, top to bottom, offense, defense, everything, that's as good a team as they're going to see. You want to know how they wanted to know what it took to be on the big stage in the Pac-12. They saw a really good example last weekend.
No, there was a great comment that Gary Barnett made late last season, and I think it was during the bowl broadcast, to be honest with you, because we'd seen Washington, of course, in the Pac-12 title game. Then we see Oklahoma State in the Alamo Bowl, and he made the comment. He said, "People need to understand in college football, there are teams from 15 to 35, all good football teams, and they can move up and down in that ranking depending on the season and the game and a week, that kind of thing. Once you get into the legitimate top 10, it changes a little bit in college football. It's a different level."
It is. It's a whole different level. And that's when you see all those little things start adding up. I mean, they had Washington, great players in the trenches, good players in the secondary, good players on offense, good players on defense, just across the board. There are no weaknesses on those teams. In fact, they're very good everywhere. And that's the difference, I think, that you saw last weekend between Colorado and Washington. Colorado's still making mistakes. They're at a point where they're still making mistakes. Washington makes you pay for those mistakes. You can get by with a mistake against, you know, don't be mad when I say this, you can get by with a mistake against Colorado State. you cannot get by with a mistake against Washington, and that's just the difference in the, in what they're seeing in the Pac-12.
Once again, you can send all the hate mail to Neil Welk for making that comment about the Rams. Yeah, without question, is it safe to say, do you think, when you talk about that separation between a top 10 team and then somebody that's outside of that, in you know, the top 25 or the top 35, in the trenches, I think over the years I've been covering college football, that's where I see the difference game in and game out. Buffs have got a lot of great skill guys. A lot of guys gone to the NFL. We saw the guys getting drafted. There are receivers in this team that are going to play in the NFL. I think the Buffs had trouble controlling the line of scrimmage. That seems to me might be the delineation between top 10 and those outside the top 10.
Oh, no doubt. If you go back and look at the great Colorado teams of the 90s, the 2001 championship team that Gary Barnett had, they had – you know, they had dominant difference-making type of guys up front, defensive line and offensive line, guys that went on and played in the NFL and that played for years in the NFL. And that's where this program has to get. I think we're getting much closer. I think you're seeing guys up front that are playing well and that have a chance to go on and play. Jordan Carroll got drafted last year. I think you'll see Jeremy Irwin get a shot to play in the NFL. But if you look at teams like Washington, they've got five or six or seven guys that are going to get a shot at the NFL. And that's where it's one. You can have all the great DBs and running backs and wide receivers in the world, but if when you're playing a top 10 team, if you can't win the battle in the trenches, you're not going to win.
Okay, now with that being said, this might be the first week, and I guess it's yet to be determined because we'll see what goes on with Jonathan Hawkins. This might be the first week where the offensive line is the offensive line in a game against UCLA that we thought it was going to be when the season started.
Yeah, this could be the first time we see that offensive line that we thought we were going to see all through camp, and that's Jonathan Hawkins at center, Tim Linehan at guard, Aaron Hagler at tackle, and then on the other side, Jared Coe and Jeremy Irwin. And you know, that's the lineup we have a chance of seeing this week, but we haven't seen it yet, and that's you know, there's a lot to be said for continuity and for gelling, and that's those guys played together all through camp, and then all of a sudden at the beginning of the season we had to have a switch because Jeremy Irwin is suspended. Then they make another switch because a guy gets injured, and so there's been a lot of juggling back and forth. If that line comes out and plays well, if that's who, you know, if that's who starts, you know, I think that's a big step forward because continuity is so important up front.
And part of what we're talking about here, because when you know, listen, you know this as well as I do. When fans start talking football, they automatically go to the quarterback position. Stevens had his ups and downs, obviously. He's a dynamic player. But along with the learning curve he's on, he's been behind a line then that maybe hasn't been as fluid as it needs to be. And so then that's going to affect him, obviously.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of different factors in that. But like you said, Steven, you know, Steven was 21 for 27 against Washington. Problem is those six incompletions actually were completions to the other team, and that doesn't help you much there. So, you know, Steven, I still think Steven has a chance to be a very, very, very good college quarterback. He's a sophomore, and we tend to forget that. He's a sophomore. I think he has a chance to be very good. I think when this line comes together, and I still think it will, I think there are a lot of good things ahead. We also have to remember they have eight Pac-12 games left, and this game this weekend against a very high-powered UCLA offense, a defense that is suspect, that has had some issues this year. This is a great chance for Colorado to come out, play well, get a Pac-12 win on the road.
Buff Nation, let me explain what you just heard from a veteran newspaper man right there. There's a guy that has been a wordsmith his whole career. When you're talking about UCLA's defense, they're giving up 44 points per game and over 500 yards of offense. Stanford ran for over 400 against them last week, and Neil just used the word suspect. That was awesome.
I'm trying to be diplomatic here, Mark. Yes, they should go out. They should move the ball on UCLA. If you're looking for, you know, Colorado's offense has yet to have that complete game that they have really moved the ball up and down the field consistently. Yes, this is a chance for Colorado's offense to come out, work out all those kinks, and have a good game. This is the perfect opportunity for them. Yes, it's on the road. Yes, it's at the Rose Bowl. But this is a great opportunity.
What is going on with the Colorado-UCLA series? This has been the strangest series here in the last few years.
Well, it's one of those series that it doesn't really matter how good one team is or the other team. 3 years ago, you know, UCLA's a top 20 team. Colorado takes them to double overtime. 2 years ago, they go out to UCLA. UCLA's close to being ranked. Colorado runs all over him but makes some mistakes. He had a pick six. They end up losing 35-31. They had the lead in the fourth quarter, just an up-and-down game. Colorado had, I think, 500 offensive yards in that game. Then last year, Colorado's ranked or getting close to being ranked. UCLA's struggling a little bit. UCLA comes in here and takes Colorado down to the wire. It takes an Isaiah Oliver punt return in the fourth quarter to kind of put that game away 20-10. So for whatever reason, these two teams always seem to be evenly matched when they hit the field.
Yeah, and of course, UCLA is coming off its second straight loss, had that shocking loss a couple of weeks ago at Memphis, and last week got ran over by Stanford. Back to the Buffaloes a little bit. You know who I'm buying stock in for the Buffaloes right now? Juwan Winfrey. I want to see more Juwan Winfrey after what we saw early in that game last week against Washington.
I agree. I really like Juwan Winfrey, and a year ago in camp in fall of 2016, he was having a terrific camp, blew out his knee, missed the whole year, missed all of spring. He's just now rounding back into what I'd call game shape. All the little things that you have to do in a game, you can't replicate those in practice. And I think you saw last week when he was playing in the slot, five catches, 30-something yards. And he's a violent runner when he catches the ball. He's also a great blocker. And so I think we're going to see more and more of Juwan Winfrey, maybe in the slot, maybe out wide, a lot of different things from him. But I agree, I want to see more of Juwan because I think he has a chance, just a junior, before all is said and done, to be a very dynamic receiver here.
Well, he got that chance last week. Of course, Jay McIntyre is down with a foot injury. We're not actually clear at this point in time whether Jay's going to be back or what the circumstance. But, yeah, well, number nine's a guy that just – he shows up and really can be dynamic, I think, for Colorado. Back to the quarterback position here for a moment. With Stephen, and you made the comment, he's only a sophomore. A little bit of what we're watching, and I think back to – we did a pregame segment with Bob Rondo, the longtime play-by-play guy for Washington, and he was asking me about him. He said that the coaches at Washington were raving about the kid and the arm he's got and that kind of thing, as dynamic as he can be. Is some of what we're seeing, this is the maturation process of a young guy, right? I mean, he's got the arm. He can make all the throws. He believes he can make all the throws. And sometimes he's going to understand, well, I shouldn't have made that throw, even though I can make that throw. Mm-hmm. But isn't it what we're looking at right now is the maturation of a guy that you and I both think is going to be a top-level quarterback? But it's part of growing up.
Yeah, that's more than anything. That's what it is. It's the maturation process of learning. Gary Barnett told me 15 years ago when he was still coaching here, he says, we love it when a quarterback can make something out of nothing. Once in a while, you have to learn to settle for nothing. Mm-hmm. Just walk away, throw the incompletion, and live to play another play. And what's interesting is I saw the same thing from a Broncos quarterback last weekend. Trevor Siemian was having a great game, but guess what? He tried to make something out of nothing, threw a couple of big interceptions, and it changed the whole complexion of that game. And that's what I think you're seeing from Steven and he's going to learn. He will pick that up. He's started, seven games now? That's what his career starting is he started seven games. So I think he's going to get better, and I think you'll see him continue to develop as a quarterback and not just a great athlete playing quarterback.
Is Philip Lindsay carrying the ball too frequently?
No. No. No.
Well, you didn't even wait till I got the microphone in front of you. No.
No. No. No. No. As long as, Philip Lindsay is built to carry that ball 20, 25 times a game. Now, if you have the situation where you can mix it up, give somebody a change of pace with a Kyle Evans or a Michael Atkins or a Bo Bichette, certainly I can see that. But, I have no worries that Philip, if you go back and look and see the number of carries, the problem is Colorado's only run about 60 or 70 plays per game this year. Last year they were running about 80 to 90. So Philip's not getting that many more carries as much as it's just they haven't had that many opportunities. I love Philip Lindsay. I like to see the ball in his hands. If they get more carries, if they can change it up, sure, then you can mix it up. But, Philip Lindsay is not getting too many carries.
I didn't say that I thought he was getting too many carries. We have time to fill. I was just asking a question to fill some time here. Hey, let's flip it over on the defensive side of the football. Anything coming out of that Washington game that concerned you?
Yeah, I think that the fact that the defensive line wore down, and that's not a knock on the defensive line. I thought they played very well the first half into the third quarter. But after a while, Washington just had the ball so much, time of possession, all those things, and the defensive line wore down. The way you prevent that from happening is make sure your offense is on the field a little bit more, you know, and don't have a lot of three and outs or four play series and things like that. So that's a little concerning, but I do think Colorado's defensive line held its own in the first half. I mean, they gave up, it was 10-7 at the half. They hadn't given up any big plays. They had controlled the running game to a degree, and it stopped Washington. So I guess the only concern there would be is can they hold up for an entire game? If the offense helps them out, I think they can.
Well, with 3 minutes left in the third, remember it was a 17-10 game at that point in time. Buffs are in it, and that's when the bottom fell out. The Pac-12 overall, Stanford didn't look good the week before, beat UCLA. Who would have thought that Arizona State was going to thump Oregon last week? I think I tend to agree with you. I think Washington is the best team in the league. Probably number two is probably USC, and after that, I'm not so sure anymore.
Yeah, I have no idea who after that. I mean, Washington in the north, USC in the south. You still have to believe that those are the two teams that are the leaders in their divisions. But after that, I have no idea. I mean, you thought Oregon had come back, was going to be really good. You know, they go down to ASU, and ASU, you know, lays a thumping on them, has to kick a field goal to win it, but they were up 31-14 in the second half. Cal. You know, Cal, as a team picked to finish last, and nobody thought anything about Cal, they were 13-13 with USC going into the fourth quarter. So there are a lot of teams in that conference, and it's going to be a very interesting conference season just to see how it all shakes out. So Colorado, obviously, you know, with eight games to go, they can still be very much in the mix for the Pac-12 South title, but they've got to start winning. You know, they need to win some games, and this is a big game for them this weekend.
Yeah, without question. And by the way, once again, our coverage gets underway at 6:30 Mountain Time on the Colorado Football Network. Gary Barnett, Mike Pritchard, yours truly. Neil, in fact, is going to make an appearance on the pregame show as well. Always the highest-rated segment of the pregame every week, undoubtedly. And then the kickoff at 8:36, I think it is, Mountain Time on Saturday night. Let's shift gears a little bit here and kind of talk general college athletics, specifically basketball. There was a scandal breaking, as you and I are recording this on Thursday, that is shaking the foundation of college basketball. It has to do with assistant coaches and Adidas, the shoe company, and investors, and the FBI's in the middle of it. This might be a cleansing of sorts for college basketball.
You know, you said three letters in there that we don't often hear when we're talking college basketball. We hear NCAA, we hear all kinds of acronyms, but when you bring that term FBI into the middle of college basketball, all of a sudden that gets everybody's attention. And yeah, I think you're right. A cleansing is maybe the best way to describe it. I think this is a game changer for college basketball. The effects of this are going to be felt for a long time, because I think it's going to change the way recruiting happens at a lot of schools. It's going to change the way the money is dished out and has been dished under the table for years by shoe companies. And so I think I will say this about Colorado basketball. I think it's a great thing for Colorado basketball, because I think Tad Boyle runs a good program here. I think he runs a clean program here. I think all the programs like that in America are quietly saying thank you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I don't think there's any doubt about that. Pete Thamel of SI had a tweet yesterday that made me laugh out loud. If you've been involved in college athletics for any point in time, you see the humor in this. He said, "This might be the largest college athletic scandal of our lifetime and the least surprising." Because if you've been involved in a sport, you know the shoe companies and how they've been involved in this thing. And essentially, I say it's a cleansing. It might be a leveler of the playing field in many respects, because, you know, we're seeing it as you and I are recording this. It looks like Rick Pitino is out at Louisville. That's not the first, you know, shoe that's going to drop around the country at this point in time. But there have been programs who have been, shall we say, embroiled in this kind of activity for a long time. There have been others, and we certainly believe, and for good reason, that, you know, Tad Boyle is running a very clean program and has not been involved. And this isn't the only one. There's plenty of programs around the country. But it's been, I think, activity that has altered what level of the sport you're going to be on. And maybe for fans, when they see this and begin to understand the details of this, maybe they begin to understand why, oh, now I see why Program X always seems to be landing those five-star guys in our conference, and maybe Tad has gone out and got some great players and some NBA guys, but why hasn't he gotten one of those guys? Maybe they start to see the explanation as to why.
No, I think that's exactly right. I think it will open a lot of eyes around the country, and people who always thought that it was just, you know, Coach X was a great recruiter. That's why he continued to land those five-star guys and come on TV and say, oh, this is the greatest day of my life. We're so lucky to get this guy. Well, maybe he wasn't lucky. Maybe those things are, you know, have some things behind the scenes that are happening. And so I honestly think this is a good time for college basketball. It's like you used the word cleansing, and I think that's a perfect description. There's going to be a lot of fallout from it. It's not going to be pretty, but I think in the long run, maybe it will clean it up, and the programs that do things the right way, like I certainly believe Tad Boyle does, maybe the playing field will be a little bit more level.
What's interesting about it is, and I'm not sure the average fan understands the level of influence that shoe companies have had all the way down to the AAU programs and who's sponsoring them. And a lot of times, you know, you see a kid that he's got it down to two schools, but one of the schools is the same sneaker company as who is AAU team. The other one's not. Oh, lo and behold, he ends up going. I don't think people understood the kind of influences that were going on for a long time in college basketball.
No, and that's been the thing, especially about college basketball with the AAU programs and all peripheral programs that were sending kids to colleges. I think there hasn't been quite the basic understanding. It's not like high school football. High school football, there are no AAU football programs where the guys go around and play 60 games in the summer. They play high school football. They may go to a few camps, but basketball is a completely different animal. And so I think this is an interesting moment, and I go back to the fact that when the FBI becomes involved, that's a big game changer. Colleges are you know, they have respect for the NCAA. They're worried when the NCAA comes knocking on the door, but they also know that they can delay that. They can appeal it. It will sometimes take 2-3 years for the NCAA to do their investigation, and then maybe they take away an NCAA tournament berth. Maybe they make them vacate some wins. The punishment is not always terrific. It may seem like it at the time, but the programs that have been hit with it always seem to bounce back. When the FBI comes knocking at your door, that appeals process changes a little bit, because all of a sudden it's not vacating a couple wins. It's jail, yeah. You know, and that's – these are some assistant college basketball coaches that are looking at jail time. That changes the equation in itself. And so, you know, I hate to say I'm glad to see it, but I think it's a good thing that finally there is going to be repercussions for what has been an interesting side of college athletics that a lot of people have chosen not to look at.
Well, and I think, when the FBI is involved, you're not just taking another job and leaving the mess in your wake and go someplace else. And,
well, you get another job, but they pay 50 cents a day.
Making license plates, is that what you're getting at?
Exactly.
Just for the record, by the way, and I know this firsthand, Neil Welch's recruitment here to see you was totally above board. No money changed hands. In fact, very little still changes hands, from what I understand.
But yeah, my shoe company wasn't any of the big ones that you'd recognize.
Give me real quick, as we're wrapping up here, though, just glancing back to football very quickly. Give me a key for the Buffs against UCLA on Saturday night.
Well, I think the key for Colorado on Saturday night, it's twofold. Number one, keeping Josh Rosen under control. He's going to complete passes. He's going to throw 50 or 55, 60 passes. Don't let him go up top and complete big ones. Make him work for everything he gets. The other thing is keep him off the field. Josh Rosen, no matter how good he is, he can't score when he's standing on the sidelines. And that's a proven fact. That's the best defense against Josh Rosen, is don't let him in the game, which means Colorado's offense has to be consistent, put together some long scoring drives. I look back at that first scoring drive that Colorado had against Washington, and I think that's what that offense can do. I'd like to see that 6 or 7 times in a game, not just once.
Yeah, I'm with you. Yeah, that first drive against the Huskies was a thing of beauty for Colorado. He's Neil Welch, CUBuffs.com. You can read his stuff all week long, and obviously after the game on Saturday, he'll have a great recap. My name is Mark Johnson of the Voice of the Buffs. We'll have the broadcast again, getting underway at 6:30 with the Buffalo Stampede. Gary Barnett, Mike Pritchard will join us for this one at the Rose Bowl, and yours truly with the call beginning at 8:36. This has been our Buffs Insider. Thanks for joining us.